Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Hello, welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now Scan Radio Show number 2440, presented by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, or NASCA. My name is Jill Kalk, calling in from the beautiful Oregon coast. I'm an adult survivor of child abuse, and I will be your host this evening. The National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse is a nonprofit 501c3 organization which is self-supporting through our own contributions. Our focus is on child abuse trauma, prevention, intervention, and recovery. Tax-deductible donations are gladly received. We have a single purpose at NASCA: to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so from two specific perspectives. One, educating the public, especially to move society beyond the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse by presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. And two, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. This is Friday, so we have our special guest with us. And if you would like to call in to be on the panel, the number is 646-595-2118. At 646-595-2118. Come join the panel. Tonight we have a very special guest. Her name is Hilda Thomasine Wren. She prefers to be called Thomasine. She's from Frederick, Maryland, and she's an abuse survivor and author of the book, A Plain Brown Wren. And welcome, Thomasine, to the NASCA show, to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. And thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate this very much.
Ah, you're welcome. We're glad you're here. I'll just mention quickly that we normally have about 20 minutes of the guest explaining, sharing their story, whatever they wish to share, starting generally with the childhood and moving forward. And then we take a break and open up the mics for individual panel members to ask questions in between that. So, Thomasine, you have the full 90 minutes. So please start wherever you would like and share your story. Thank you very much.
Thank you again. I'm going to start with my childhood. My childhood was very hard and difficult. I had, unfortunately, alcoholic parents who really didn't pay very much attention to what I was doing or what was going on in my life. My stepfather was my first abuser. When I was around 8, 9 years old, I started budding, you know, becoming a young woman. And he would touch me inappropriately throughout my breasts. He thought he was playing. He thought it was funny. I didn't.
Mm.
And I made a promise to myself after about maybe 6 or 7 times that if he did it again, I was going to do something to harm him. And sure enough, whenever I made a promise to God and myself, I always completed that task. And just so happened was the first Teflon skillet that came out back in the 60s. And I ended up hitting him, and he thought I was playing until he started hurting. So I heard my mother say that night to him, I think you need to stop. She knew what was happening, but because he was a very abusive person, she was afraid to say anything to him until I had the outbreak of fighting back. So when the next thing, when I became about 12, my daycare person used to send me to the post office to get stamps or mail packages for her at least once a week, sometimes twice a week. And the guy in the post office eventually raped me. And I thought I wanted to get away from my household. So I was looking for love in all the wrong places. But what does a 12-year-old know? Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing about love, nothing about sex or anything. So he was the first one who had intercourse with me, I'll say that, and which was statutory rape because he was 36 and I was 12. I ended up running away from home, and my mom thought that he and his wife were kind of adopting me. So she did go to his house looking for me, thinking that I may have gone there, trying to get away from home. And that's when his wife found out what was going on.
Oh, wow.
So, yes. So after that, my stepfather's sister was a madam. She had a home of ill repute. And she knew that I was with the guy with the at the post office. So if I said to her, you know, I sure would like to have a new pair of shoes. My parents weren't poor. They just didn't spend their money on me, per se. And I would say to my aunt, oh, you know, I'd like to have a new pair of shoes. And she says, you know, you're sitting on money. And I never understood what she was saying. You know, and I'd say, well, what do you mean by that? And she says, well, you're sitting on money, you could make money. And eventually, I was over at her house, and a guy was standing in the kitchen, and I was standing in the kitchen as well, and she said to him, would you like to see something beautiful? And he said, yeah. She says, well, you have to pay $10 to see it. Now, I'm standing in front of her, and she's standing behind me.
Okay.
And this guy said yes, he wanted to see whatever, and she pulled up my blouse. And, of course, I didn't have a bra on because my mother didn't think that I needed a bra. But I probably did. So anyway, the guy, he politely gave up the $10 and said it was beautiful. And my mother, my aunt said to me, well, you see, I told you, you're sitting on money. So I ended up becoming a prostitute for her for more than from age 12 to 25.
Wow.
And it was shameful, very shameful for me. No one ever knew until I wrote the book, of course. I think my mom may have thought it.
Mm-hmm.
Every now and then she would say, why did you go over to Ann's house? But she had children my age, so I would say, well, I went to play with the kids, you know. We were all the same age. And my aunt did have one of her daughters doing the same thing.
Oh, my goodness.
So you feel, as a child, you feel like, okay, the others are doing it, why not I?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So as time went on, I did that until I decided that I was going to go to hell. You know, I did go to church. I did have some feeling that there was a God, and, you know, if I didn't stop, I was going to go to hell. So I went into my closet and prayed and asked God to help me through the situations. You know, one day you say you're not going to do it. The next day you don't have money, so you go where you know you can find or get money, and that is through prostitution. I did that for a long time, and then finally I got married. I got married to a correctional officer. I worked at the jail, and he worked at the jail. I was there as a secretary, and he was there as a correctional officer. And I was still prostituting. This is the bad part. I was still prostituting, and I didn't have to, but I was afraid to stop because I was afraid my aunt would tell him.
Oh.
That was her way of keeping me, you know?
Yeah.
So eventually I just couldn't take it, so I decided, you know, you have to stop, Thomasine. So I went in my closet and I prayed 3 times a day and asked God to help me. And sure enough, it took a year, but it was God and I. We finished, we completed that, and I stopped.
Oh, well, I just want you to stop there, because that is a perfect point to break, I think. Wow. That I'm glad you had that that guidance and that help, and wow. Okay, we have quite a panel that has joined. So are you ready to handle some questions from people?
Yes,
and remember, you only have to answer what you feel comfortable with, okay?
All
right. This isn't an interrogation. Okay, great. we're going to start with Bill, who's our CEO of NASCA. Hi, Bill. You're on with Thomasine.
Thanks so much, Joe. Appreciate your stepping in for Carol tonight, and I'm happy to step in for you.
Thank you.
I'm grateful to Thomasine. I want you to know, Joe, that she stepped in here last minute. She was recommended by a mutual friend of ours, but did not expect to be on tonight's show until about 36 hours ago, and we got it all together. And I'm really excited to have her and very appreciative, and that's what I want her to know. I know she's first time here. And she has a lot to offer and a lot of information for people who are kind of newer than us to the issues of child abuse and trauma. So, Thomasine, we weren't sure what to call you. Reverend Hilda Thomasine. Apparently we settled on Thomasine, and I'm delighted to make your acquaintance now on the air. All right, well, I'll let you go and keep plenty of time for you. Thanks a lot, Joe, though, and thank you, Thomasine.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. All right, we're going to next go to Pamela in Louisiana. Hi, Pamela. You're on with Thomasine. Pamela, do you have your mic muted? Okay. All right, well, let's return there. Let's go on to Pam in Miami. Hi, Pam. You're on with Thomasine.
Hi. This is Anne from Miami.
Who? Anne?
You're Anne, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. No problem.
Do you have any questions? Oh.
Your story is very compelling, and it is shocking, but for us survivors, we know that that is, it happens, and it's part of our lives. And did you have any problems with coping in the last few years once you decided to stop and tell you share your story?
Oh, yes, I had a lot of problems. I was always off and on suffering from depression, anger, always afraid that somebody knew my story. Even though I had not told anyone, I felt as though there was a sign on the back of my, on my back stating, she's been abused, come on, you're next, or someone could see through me. So you're in a, well, just think if you had to keep a secret, you know, that's the hardest thing to do. So I ended up having to get help from a psychiatrist and therapist and what have you.
Cool. Thank you. And thank you for that, Anne. And we'll hear more from Thomasine as the evening goes on. Thank you. Next, we're going to Al from Washington, D.C. Hi, Al. You're on with Thomasine.
Hi. Good morning, or good evening, rather. I'm sorry. And hello, Thomasine.
Hello.
I know Thomasine also, so I'm just calling in mainly to support her, and I know a lot about her story, and so she's also helped me with things that I've gone through in my lifetime to overcome things also, and that's one of the most beautiful things that she was able to turn around what has occurred in her life as tools to be able to help others to go through their journey also. So I'd just like to say thank you for that. And and I'm not going to take much time. I just wanted to say that and say thank you. So
thank you for your support.
You're welcome.
Yes. Thank you for calling in, Al. And I'm glad to hear that she was of help. Thank you. All right, we have someone from 443 area code. Hello, may I ask who's calling, please?
Yes, hello? My name is Amanda.
Hi. Amanda?
Hi. Yes,
hi, you're on with Thomasine.
Hi, Ms. Thomasine.
Hello.
I know Ms. Thomasine, too, through Mr. AJ and Ms. Karen and my mom. And I was told by Mr. Al to jump on and listen.
Okay. Would you prefer to just listen, or would you like to be included in asking questions? Because we can go either way for that.
I don't know. At this
Amanda.
Point, I didn't even know that you guys could talk to me.
Okay, I'll keep checking back in with you. How's that? Okay?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, and thank you for calling in and supporting Thomasine, thank you. All right, we're going to try one more time with Pamela out of Louisiana. Hi, Pamela.
Hi.
You're on with Thomasine.
Hi, Ms. Thomasine.
Hi, Pam.
Hey, sweetheart. We talked all day and the other day, and I was trying to see if she wanted to tell her story, because I was telling her how empowering it was, and I'm going to be showing her about the website. I didn't want to show her that up front and get her too overwhelmed. But, Ms. Thompson, can you talk a little bit about the physical abuse that your stepdad did to you when you were younger?
Okay. Unfortunately, my stepfather was an alcoholic, and he also, later on, I found out that he was mentally ill as well, psychotic.
Mm.
So whenever you just never knew what type of person was going to come into the house. If he was sober, he was quiet. But if he was drinking, he was loud. He always assumed something was wrong. So if I bought a bad, I'll give you an example. If I bought a bad report card at home, which was normal for me because my home was chaotic. My psychiatrist told me I lived in a war zone. So I couldn't, I couldn't study. I couldn't do well in school. So he would beat me. But the way he beat me was he made me take all my clothes off. And this happened from the time I was a little girl until I was 15. I don't know why he stopped at 15, but he did, and I think I started talking back to him, but even that made it worse because sometimes he'd just smack me, you know, upside my face or what have you. It was a very, very terrible time because if he was not beating me, he was beating my mother. So I had to run and call the police, go next door to my neighbor and call the police 1-2 o'clock in the morning. And they would come and take him to jail, and then we'd go to court. But my mom was afraid to press charges for her beatings because she was afraid he would do it again, and which he did several times.
Oh, goodness. Wow. Thank you. Thank you, Pamela, for that being there to support her.
Thomasine brings up that back in the day when this was happening, there was no CPS. This was before the time of,
Yeah.
Okay. So they called the police.
They had laws for animals before they had laws for children.
No. Isn't that the truth? Oh, just disgusting. All right. Pamela, thank you very much, and we'll come back to you. All right. Thomasine, you're welcome to continue where you were, or if you'd like to fill in any of the parts from your earlier childhood. But the phone's all yours.
All right. I think I'll just finish where I left off, where I was married. I ended up marrying.
Mm-hmm.
One thing people need to understand is when you've been in an abusive relationship as a child, you go where you're comfortable. So I married an alcoholic who also was abusive. But I decided after I was married for 7 years, I got married when I was 20. By the time I was 28, I was divorced. And I made up my mind that I was never going to have anyone beat on me like my stepfather beat on my mother. And I took my husband to court, and just so happened, the lawyer that helped me out had an interrogatory that he had sent my husband for the jail. One of the inmates or a couple of inmates had complained that my husband and a few other guards had beat them. And so when the attorney asked him, "Did you beat your wife?" he said, "Yes." And so he went on to tell him, he says, "Listen, I have an interrogatory that you filled out, and you said you never touched the inmates, but yet you beat your wife." He says,
"Whoa.
Now, I'm going to say this to you. If you ever touch her again, I will put you in the jail where you work."
Whoa.
So from that day on, I could have done anything I wanted to do, but, of course, I was afraid. And I just felt that it was best to just get out of the relationship altogether. So that's why I got a divorce.
Sounds like self-care there.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I just wanted to say, all in all, I've always suffered from depression and anger issues. fear that someone knew my past or what have you. And but I've always prayed and asked God to be with me. And I have to thank my psychiatrist, Dr. Frances Kress Welsing, who is no longer with us at this time. But she really helped me to understand that what happened to me was not my fault. I was a child.
Good.
And
good.
The person who was the adult was in control.
Mm-hmm.
So
good
it
advice.
Took me a long time to understand that.
Wow. Yeah.
So if you have any more questions, I'd be glad to answer them as best
okay.
I can.
Okay. All righty. Yeah. Okay. We will go through the panel again. You're doing great, Thomasine. Thank you. And I'm still remembering the when you mentioned about thought you had something on your back that said, "Hey, pick on her." You know, it's so, I was thinking of a kick me sign, and I was thinking that you know, you feel like there's something there that they all know. All right, let's go to Bill. Bill, you're on with Thomasine.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's great that she has so much support here. That's the main thing I wanted to make note with Al and Amanda and Pamela. Pamela Lockridge was the one that suggested Thomasine get get hooked up with us. So I want to thank all three of them for coming on. It's kind of rare that we have three people come on and support a guest, but how wonderful! And apparently they all know pieces of her story. But I want to tell them that our listeners don't. So ask questions or make comments about things you'd like to bring out from Thomasine, because we'd love you to help us present her in the light that you think will be useful to anybody else. So, but Thomasine, I'm really, I think, impressed, as most people would be, at how honest you're being, how forthcoming. And I don't obviously, well, maybe not, it's not obviously, but I don't relate to being prostituted out, but that doesn't matter. I relate to all the other stuff, the feelings and the thinking and the wanting to not be where I was, getting away, and all that stuff that you're sharing about. And I think there'll be a lot of commonality with the listener too. So thank you very much, Joe, for giving me a chance to share a little bit. And I know the other panelists will have questions and comments too.
Thank you, Bill. All right. Thank you. All right, now we're going to Pamela. You're on with Thomasine.
Hi, Thomasine. You're doing excellent.
Thank you.
I just wanted to mention to y'all, she sent me her book, and I didn't read it. And then I picked it up the day when I knew she was coming on here. I said, I got to read it. And so I picked it up. It is an absolute page-turner. And
wow.
Yes, it's a page-turner, and it's a healing. You can see the healing that she went through. You know, as she was going through this, she was asking questions. And I was just going to get her to tell y'all, and I'm sure she will, about her biological father and how that happened and everything. And Thomasine,
yes.
How you feeling right now? I want to tell you how sorry I am that you had to go through all that. A lot of times we don't, really tell each other how we feel about, it makes you want to cry, it makes you want to just well up, but we keep a stiff upper lip and we try to keep going for others,
Yes, we do.
I know in your book you said that your purpose is what? To comfort others is what you said.
I feel as though my calling is to comfort and console others who have gone through similar situations. And being also a grief counselor, I have an opportunity to help others get through the grief of losing loved ones.
Wow. Wow.
But you want me to tell the story about my dad, my real dad.
Yeah, but She's got some other calls.
If you feel,
that may want to
if
talk
you want.
To you.
Oh, okay, good. If you want
okay.
to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Go to another caller.
Oh, okay. And then, yes, but if you feel comfortable doing, you know, talking about your dad, okay, but it's not, you know, not required. Okay. Just wanted to say. Okay, let's go to Al in Washington, D.C. And Al, you're on with Thomasine.
Okay. Hi. I do have a question. And the question that I'm going to present to Thomasine is, from knowing you, a lot of the things that you're talking about in your life and that you've talked about in your life are very cyclical, like they've been repeater type situations because of things that you know, or that you knew, rather, I'm sorry. But do you feel that that cycle has been broken at this point in your life?
Oh, yes. Hmm. Yes, definitely. Through healing with Dr. Welsing and also the alternative modalities that I've gone through with others who were healers as well, I think the chain has been broken and has been broken for forever.
Wow.
You learn from your lessons, and I think we're here to learn lessons on planet Earth, you know? And so, you know, if you don't learn anything, how are you going to get any better?
That's
true.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, Al. That was great.
Thank you.
Okay. And now we go to Amanda. Amanda, you're on with Thomasine.
Hi, Ms. Thomasine.
Hi.
My question for you is, do you still struggle with opening up and showing your vulnerability?
Mm.
Well, let's put it this way. When I first got on the telephone this evening, I was a little nervous. But as time goes on, I don't have a problem with it now. I mean, I've written the book, and I always feel that something I say or will say will help others. You never know who has been through similar situations. And people listen to what you have to say, and sometimes they'll come to you and say, thank you for telling your story because I cannot tell mine, or I'm afraid to tell mine. I did have that happen to me once I published the book.
Mm.
In fact, my pharmacist said to me once, you know, I often wondered why you had to have so many antidepressants. Now I know why, you know.
Wow.
But now I can say that I've been off of all antidepressants since September 2016.
Wow. Okay. All right. That sounds like a story coming up. All right. thank you, Amanda.
Yes, ma'am.
And now we go to Anne in Miami. Hi, Anne. You're on with Thomasine. Are you muted? Okay. Anne? All right. We'll come back to her in a little bit. All right. Okay. Thomasine, you mentioned
I think this is Pam. Not Anne, but Pam in Miami. Is it Pam or Anne? I have Pam.
Okay.
Is it Pam?
Hello. Is it Pam or Anne in Miami?
It's Anne in Miami.
Anne in Miami. Okay. Thank you.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you, Bill. Yeah. Would you like to ask a question or make a comment for Thomasine?
I'm kind of just listening right now because I'm unable to ask a question at the moment. So.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. Now, Thomasine, you were mentioning about angry and depressed. For me, depression is anger turned inward. Does that make sense to you.
Yes.
And I was wondering how your anger came out, or was it? I just was interested in how you worked with others, how you interacted with others, and during this early times in your life.
Well, I would get into arguments with people over little things, and those little things were triggers that I knew nothing about. I didn't know what triggers were.
Uh-huh.
So someone might say something, I can't even think of anything right now, but someone might say something that wouldn't bother you, but it would be something that would just send me to the moon and back. I mean, I would get into the biggest argument, and I would curse and act like I don't know what, and people would look at me and say, well, what's wrong? And I couldn't tell them. So you go home and you say, well, why did I go off like that? What was wrong with me? And only in the last maybe 10 years have I realized that they were triggers. So now when I feel someone says something that's a trigger, I try and count to 10 and say, hey, what's going on with you? Why are you feeling a little funny? And I'll say, well, it must be a trigger. It must be a trigger.
Okay.
Like someone said to me not too long ago, I'll give you a good example. Someone said something to me like, women play games. And I remember, a man said that, I remember as a child, I didn't like playing games. And I don't play games now as an adult. I'm talking about just little games that children play, like a puzzle. I didn't like that. I didn't like for people to say in government, when I was working in the government, oh, we are going to, we want you to look at some systems furniture and make up your mind which company you think we should use. And then while you're sitting there looking at the systems furniture and you're trying to decide for them which one you want to use, they say, well, we've already given such and such company a certain amount of money. And I'm like, well, why the hell you waste our time?
Yeah, exactly. Whoa.
This is game playing to me, you know? You've already decided what you want. So what are you doing?
Yeah.
So anyway, this happened not too long ago. This person said that people play women play games on men. And I didn't lose it. I understood that it was a trigger, and I just said to him, listen, I didn't play games as a child, and I don't play games as an adult.
Very good answer. I like that one.
Wow.
Thank you. Wow. Okay. If you would like to continue on from where you left off, I'm all ears. Thank you.
Well, I think Pam wanted me to talk about my dad, my biological father.
If you're up to it.
Oh, I'm fine. My mother and father married in 1943, and they had a problem in conceiving. And they went to a doctor, and the doctor gave them a little something. And then my mom got pregnant. But in that time period, between the time that she wasn't pregnant, she met my stepfather and started dating him. And in doing so, she got pregnant. So she had already made up her mind that she wanted to leave my dad. So when I came, I actually was born, she told my stepfather I was his child. And she knew that I wasn't. I mean, everybody knew that I wasn't, except for my stepfather. I think he knew, but he just didn't pay attention. So anyway, I didn't know my father. I didn't meet my father until I was 22 years old. But once I did meet him, he could not accept me. I as I've thought about this and and talked to my psychiatrist about it. I truly believe that my father was angry with my mom, and the only way he could get back at her was to be angry with me or cause me pain. So he wasn't able to accept me at one time. Well, both times. He was married, and I met him when I was 22, and I learned to love him, and 7 years later he told me that I could not be his child. He had no paternal instincts for me and sent me away. And I cried for 5 years because it was almost like losing, I shouldn't say losing a lover, but it felt like that. Because I learned to respect him. I learned to love him as my father. And I had also learned to love his wife. And for someone to just cast you out as you're a nobody was very painful for me. So I left him alone. I left him alone. And then, but his sisters have always been loving to me. And one sister would come visit me and tell me, don't tell your father I came to visit. Don't do this, don't do that. And I never did. I never told. But when his wife died, I wrote him and told him that I felt that he was getting older and that he needed someone in his life because both of his sisters had died by that time. And he had no one else. He didn't have any other children. I was his only child. So we got together when I was, I was maybe 50, 52, 53 years old. And I would spend time with him. He was very depressed over the death of his wife. So I had him going to see a psychiatrist and taking antidepressants and what have you. And I would stay with him 3 nights and stay with my mom 4 nights and try and take care of 2 aging parents. And one night he said to me while I was at his house, Tomasino, are you looking at the same thing I'm looking at on television? Because I was in my room and he was in his room. And I said, yes. And he said to me, well, why don't you come in here and lay in bed with me and look at television? And that was a trigger. That was a trigger. And I said, no, I can't do that, Dad. And he says, why? I never got a chance to look at cartoons with you when you were a child. So why can't you just? And I said, I can't do that. I can't do that. And I finally said to him, okay, I'll sit in the chair in your room and look at television with you. And even after I sat in the chair, I was so uncomfortable. I couldn't think. I said, I can't do this. I couldn't even sit in the chair then. So finally, I got up, went in my room, and couldn't sleep all night long. And so happened, I had an appointment with my psychiatrist the next day, and I went to see her, and I told her what happened. So she said to me, listen, let me tell you what I want you to do. She says, you continue to visit your father, but don't stay there in his house. She says, now you all play cards, you always cook for him, what have you. You do that, but you go home. Go home. Don't stay with him. So once I told him that's what I was going to do, he said to me, I'm going to get married. I'm going to find me a wife, and I'm going to get married. And he did just that. And then again, he kicked me out of his life again.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Oh, my goodness. Well, your instincts were right on there, I would say. And good advice from your therapist. Wow.
Yeah, I didn't know what he was thinking. I didn't want to go there, you know, but I just couldn't do it. I couldn't do it.
Wow. Okay. All right. did you want to continue a little bit? You were talking about joining a church and thing, or do you want to go through the panel once more? I just want to leave it up to you where you would like to pursue.
Right. Well, we can go through the panel again, see if anyone has
okay.
any questions. Maybe someone might jog my memory.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, all right. Well, let's go back to Bill. And Bill, you're on with Thomasine.
Yeah, I don't have any questions. I just have the comment that, you know, that a lot of us are very confused about what's happening to us while it's happening. I hear a bunch of that in Thomasine's story, and I'm sure there's a lot of identification. You know, when we're children, we're not knowledgeable. We're innocent, frankly, and don't have any experience in life. And when quote odd things start happening unquote to us, we eventually learn a sort of in a child's way what's wrong about it. But we still don't have a grasp on all the intricacies that we'll later have as adults. And one of the things that happens is we kind of get stuck in the childhood thought patterns. We think of ourselves as responsible or ashamed or, you know, but the fact is the responsibility and the shame, of course, belongs to all these predators she's got in her life, not to us.
Mm-hmm.
But to overcome that, you know, to overcome that is not an easy thing. And I want to assure folks that are listening tonight that many of us identify with, and I do too, with sort of the, how she felt about it all. But I can mm-hmm. also respect and hear in her story, she didn't feel like that anymore. And so I'm just mm-hmm. saying that there's a path to get to a place where you're kind of resurrected as a new person by doing the work. Of course, it doesn't just happen. But by
yeah.
doing the work,
yeah.
and she's going to share about that in a little while. So that's what that would be my comment for at this point, Joe. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Bill. All right, we go to Pamela. Pamela, you're on with Thomasine.
Hi, Ms. Thomasine. You're doing great.
Thank you.
Yeah, I know I was pretty nervous the first time I came on, but the host was very good at, you know, asking questions and let me slow down and take time and take a breath. My question is, did you ever tell your real dad what happened to you during your life, or did you want to spare him that?
Oh, I sent him the first manuscript.
Ah.
Yes, I did.
Wow.
I wanted him to know that, because at the time I did it, I was kind of angry with him because I always wondered why he didn't come and rescue me. But he didn't know what I was going through. He knew my stepfather. He had met my stepfather in the courthouse when my mom and dad got their divorce. He had met my stepfather maybe a couple of years before they got a divorce. But he didn't know what type of person he was. He didn't know that he was an alcoholic. He didn't know that he was psychotic. He didn't know that he was an abusive person.
Wow.
Did he know that, did your biological dad know that you were his, or did he think?
He knew, but he wanted to let sleeping dogs lie, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You know.
I think in the book you said something about doing a DNA test at one time.
Oh, yeah, we did that. Oh, he was 82 and I was 53.
Wow.
I laugh about that because when you go to those labs, they make you stand together with a number between the two of you, like you're in jail or something, and they take your picture first.
Huh.
And then they
huh.
take the swab from both of you. And they send it away, and yes, we got it back within, I think it was like 3 or 4 weeks, and they sent it back. And my father had already said to me, right after we took the test, he says, listen, I'm probably not your father, so why don't we just have lunch today, and afterwards you just go your way and I'll go my way. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, that's fine. You want it that way? That's fine. But, and he had already called, he'd also gone to my psychiatrist and told her that he did not want to take the test. And he wanted her to talk me out of taking the test. And she said to him, Mr. Wren, your daughter is a grown woman, and she has every right to know who her father is. So he had no other choice but to go, because I was paying for it. Uh-huh. I told him I would pay for it. So anyway, we went. We had the test, and 4 weeks later, I got my results the day before, and it said 99, whatever, that we were father and daughter. And I didn't call him. Mm-hmm. I didn't call him. I made up my mind. He said he wanted to walk away, and this was like the third time, you know? So he got the results the next day, and he called me up so excited that the results was positive. But I'm the spitting image of the man. We're the same height, the same coloring. We even walk alike. We stand alike. His wife pointed that out. You all stand just like each other, you know. And he says, well, come on, let's celebrate. And I said, no, I'm not celebrating with you. You told me that you wanted to walk away. Oh, come on, Thomasine, come on. And I said, I went ahead and said, okay, fine. He picked me up and we went for lunch, and we started off trying to be father and daughter, but it didn't work out.
Yeah.
He just couldn't forgive. Unfortunately, he had not taken the forgiveness course that I took.
He held on to forgiveness of your mother. He didn't forgive your mother, right?
He didn't forgive my mom. Mm-hmm. So he felt that hurting me would hurt my mother, but I didn't tell my mother I told her what was going on, but she was not one to take on that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. She didn't care. You said in the book, or out of your own mouth, that she didn't. He couldn't hurt her through hurting you, because she didn't care about it.
No, she didn't really. It was almost like they were in a fight for me.
Yeah.
Who's going to
take
care of me? They were very selfish people.
Ah. Hmm.
And also, if you want to later, you can talk about how controlling your mother was and how she, you know, what was it that she did? She was always mad because you would go try to have a relationship with your dad.
Hmm.
Well, to have a relationship with anyone, she would be very upset with me. Even with a girlfriend, she took my girlfriends and said, those are my, she's my, look how nice she treats me. She's better to me than you are. It's like she was, yeah, she.
Wow.
Okay, that's all I wanted to know.
Thank you. Thank you, Pamela.
Okay.
Okay, and next up is Al. You're on with Thomasine.
Okay, I'm here. So, I know that you are that you went through the back and forth struggle with your paternal father, and I know that it was hard generationally also because of the time that he grew up in, and then the things that you were going through yourself. So there was like a angst there. There was the push and the pull, and and the harshness within your own lives together. I mean, your own lives individually, and then trying to figure out a way to bridge that gap between you and him to find some sort of commonality or some sort of togetherness. And then I would just bring it down to just saying, is there any love here? So at this point now, since he's been, he's no longer here, and you're still carrying on with your life, do you feel now that in the way that things turned out, the way that you see things now, you know, from where you are, being able to look backwards and see it, do you feel calmer? Do you feel more peaceful? Do you feel that there was some love there, but due to extraneous circumstances and things that you've been able to overcome bad enough to find a peace with that relationship or with that situation in the now?
With both of my parents. Okay, were you going to say something else? I'm sorry.
And I was going to say, because I'm trying to say it in a way that I'm not trying to put too much in there, you know. So, you know.
Hal, I don't hear you at all now.
Oh, I'm not speaking. I was waiting.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
I'm done. I'm sorry. I'm done.
Okay. With both of my parents, I feel as though they loved me as best as they could, if you understand what I'm saying. They didn't know any better. I think that they were very immature adults. And they were very selfish people. So
yes.
I feel that they loved me as best they could. Now that they're gone, I feel a sense of relief. I am very peaceful with my surroundings. And with those that I've made a family without blood. The people that are around me now are not my blood relatives. So we have to make our families with people who want to be around us, who love us and who we love, and who understand us and accept us as we are.
I like that. Thank you.
Beautiful.
Thank you. Good question, Gal. Thank you. All right, Amanda, get your mic open here. And you are on with Thomasine.
Hi, Ms. Thomasine.
Hi, I wanted to acknowledge you, Amanda. I didn't realize who you were until later on. Thank you so much for calling and supporting me.
Yes, ma'am. I relate a lot with your story, minus the prostitution part. My question for you, so I'm younger, for people who don't know me, I'm 30, oh goodness, how old am I? 33, I think. And even when CPS was around and things like that back in the 80s and early 90s, I know that for me that whole system failed me. So when the adults in charge fail you,
So did you ask a question, Amanda?
I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm so sorry, sweetheart.
Okay. It's okay. When the adults fail you, it's really hard.
Yeah. Yes, it is. It is.
And you do enclose to those around you, and they do nothing, and they cover it up.
I'm sorry, Amanda, that you're going through this.
Yeah.
How do you learn to trust those who deserve your trust?
Amanda, you don't trust them. You have to
no,
trust.
No, those who deserve your trust.
I didn't hear you. I'm sorry.
Those who deserve your trust. For instance, and I'll just bring Alan there because I always say that he's my godfather. He's the father that God sent me. It took me probably a good 2.5 years before I could even really trust him. How do you learn to trust again? Because for me, it's me, myself, and I. It's me against the world.
Well, I always pray, Amanda. I pray that God would send me someone that I can trust. And since I have divorced my husband, he was the only one that I kind of trusted until I realized I couldn't. God has always sent me better people. When you get better, the people are, you start attracting better people or more positive people around you. That's the way I look at it. When you start to heal, then God will bring you people who are healing as well or have healed or who can help you in your process of healing. Does that make sense?
Yes, ma'am.
And that's what has happened for me. You all don't know this, but my father introduced me to Al. They were in a antique car club together, and we just happened to meet, and then Al happened to be with my father when he died. I didn't even know my father was dying. I used to call the police and asked them to do a wellness check because I felt something was wrong. And the last day, the last time I called them, the police officer went to the house and this new wife of my father was coming from the funeral home. She had made arrangements and my father was still in bed, dead. Oh. And the police, she didn't realize she was supposed to call the police first. They were supposed to pronounce him dead and then go to the funeral home or then call me and let me know, but she didn't do that. So Al has helped me along the way as well.
He's a good man, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Cool. Thank you.
So are there any more questions?
We have one more person, actually, and we only have about 25 minutes left. The hour and a half going really fast, but I wanted to get Patricia. You're on with Thomasine.
Hi, Thomasine. Hello, everyone.
Hi.
Can you hear me? Hi.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Patricia, for supporting me.
You're welcome. You're story is really a fascinating story, and it certainly resonates with me just in terms of sometimes going through rejection. I mean, you knew your father, and I didn't know my father, and just dealing with that whole piece of the father image and not knowing him or knowing him and then feeling rejected by him, whether it is, you know, physically knowing him or not having known him. And what kind of advice could you give me as a woman in terms of moving forward in a relationship and trying to deal with just rejection of a father and how I don't allow that to maybe ruin a relationship, a male relationship that I move forward with?
Boy, that's a tough question, Pat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it seems like that would be something that's different for every person because of the different backgrounds and relationships But you basically have to take care of yourself and go with what you're really feeling. Like Thomasina was saying about when her father was, you know, asking her to go into, you know, watch television with him and stuff, that didn't feel right. So taking one person, you cannot apply it to a whole, you know, all men or all people or whatever. So, but it is a very difficult question and a very personal one that we each have our own ways of handling it.
Right. Yeah. Because sometimes it's true. It is personal and it is something that I think does go with you and it does follow you into relationships. So it's how do you juggle that?
I can remember times of not trusting men. Period. there are flags that come up. If I see a man drink 3 drinks in front of me, I'm gone.
Mm-hmm.
That's a trigger for me, you know, because I feel like when you're drinking, that's a possibility that you will allow the alcohol to control you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not seeing the real you because there's that component of alcohol. Or it could be drugs or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that's about the most I can say about
thank
that.
Thank you. All right.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, Patricia. All right. We have 20 minutes. I'd like to hear how you're doing now and about a little bit about your book, if you'd like.
Well, I am doing very well now. I think that through a forgiveness course I've taken with my pastor, I just finished, it hasn't been more than 2 months, we did a course in childhood traumas with my pastor. And it was so funny because I got to a certain point and I was beginning to get a little nervous and I said to him, he does a 6-week course in all of his courses. It can be childhood traumas, it can be forgiveness, it can be on prosperity or whatever. But this particular course, the 6 weeks was up and I said to him, I said, Reverend Webb, I have tools in my bag. But I don't know what tools to use because I'm confused here. You know, you've brought some things out that I don't even know how to deal with.
Wow.
I said, you can't leave me high and dry. And I'm sure that other people are going through the same thing. You've got to extend this course. And he said, okay. He says, I will extend it 2 weeks. I said, well, thank you. And sure enough, he did. And by the end of the 2 weeks, I was fine. I knew what tools to pull out of that bag and how to use them.
Great.
Don't ask me how to do that now. But I was able to do, I had to do some writing.
Good.
That's what I had to do. I had to do some writing and, you know, think about and meditate on what he was saying.
Uh-huh. Probably helped others who were probably in a similar situation and didn't feel comfortable talking to him. So that was good.
Yeah. I have a very good relationship with him.
That's good. So what are you into now? Well, I want to know what you're into now, but also just how you got to write your book, how you started to write your book.
Oh, okay. Well, I can do that now. Say talk about that.
Okay.
I had a nervous breakdown on my job in November of 1998, and I said some things because three things happened within a 2-hour window of time after the death of my stepfather. I took off a week and helped plan for his funeral and what have you. And when I went back to work, everyone had left. One lady went out on maternity leave. Another lady got another job, and my team leader said that she was getting ready to go on a detail, and she didn't want to come back. And then my check was screwed up because we were under that new pay-per-performance under Vice President Gore and President Clinton. And I had gotten too much money, but I didn't know that I had gotten too much money, so they started taking money out of my paycheck, and all these people were gone, and it was a mess that day. And I asked them, what are you all going to do about this? You know, you're leaving me here to do this work. And I ended up having a nervous breakdown, and I said to someone, if you all don't straighten this stuff out by the end of the week, someone's going to get hurt or I'm going to lose my job.
Wow.
And I took off. I just took off. I said, I can't deal with this. And I found myself dreaming that I was going to hurt my supervisor. So I called my primary care doctor and said to her, listen, there's something going on. I'm crying. I can't stop crying, but I see myself hurting my supervisor. So she asked me to come in. And I did, and she put me on 75 milligrams of Effexor, told me to go home, go to bed. She also wrote my employer and said, listen, I believe she is very ill, and if she doesn't get better in 10 days, I'm going to have to send her to the hospital.
Wow.
And meantime, she asked me to get a psychological evaluation. So I met Dr. Welsing, and she said, give me 6 weeks. And I knew within 6 weeks I could not tell her all that had happened to me. I felt that I had to get it all out. So I went home after my first visit with Dr. Welsing, and I typed up 99 pages of everything that happened to me, double-spaced.
Wow.
And I went back on the second week. And I gave it to her. She read it, came back on the third or fourth week or whatever, and she says, I have an author on my hands. I said, no, you don't. I will never tell anybody what I've told you. So we went, the process of trying to heal started then. And as I kept telling her more and more stories, because I had forgotten a lot of them, she says, you need to add that. You need to add that. You need to add this. So I kept adding. But I took this three-ring binder and I threw it in a bookshelf and I left it there for 5 years. And finally one day she said to me, Ms. Wren, I want you to publish a book. And I says, I'm not going to tell people my business. She says, I think it would really help other women who have been in your shoes, but they're afraid to tell. They're afraid. And I don't know what happened. I don't know if I was hypnotized or I don't drink, but I felt a thing of euphoria or something that whatever she said, I just did it at that time. I just found out how to publish it. I sent it off to, I got an editor, and then I sent it off to Amazon, and there it was, a book.
Wow.
But I did go through a lot of depression because there were people who, like my mom and the community where I live, that were very angry with me for telling our business. You don't do that.
Okay. That's hard.
Yes, it was. Very hard.
How'd you get past that?
It took a long time. It took a very long time. Dr. Welsing would tell me that whatever people were saying about me, it was none of my business. Whatever people think about mm-hmm. you is none of your business. You're the one who's healing here. This is not your fault in what happened. Then one of the professors at the University of Maryland somehow or another got my book, and she used it as a textbook with her students in social work.
Whoa.
She taught
wow.
social work. So every year I would go and talk to them, and that's how I started healing, because these young people were getting ready to go out into the world to help children like me.
Wow.
Like I was. So that's what kind of brought me to accept what I had written and accept and look at myself differently.
Uh-huh.
I was no longer a victim. I was a survivor.
Wow.
And then I volunteered with the hospital. We have a sexual assault unit in Maryland.
Mm.
So I went and started holding the survivors. I call them survivors. I never call them victims.
Mm-hmm.
But these
mm-hmm.
were women who had been raped, young girls who had been mm-hmm. raped. So I stood next to them and held their hands while the kits were being made, the rape kits were being done.
Oh, wow. Bless you.
And I would use my hypnotherapy training or
mm-hmm.
just talk to them about anything they wanted to talk about so that they could keep their mind off of what was going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Oh.
So once you put yourself into trying to help others, you forget about your pain.
Mm-hmm.
And it eases.
Mm-hmm.
You heal. You actually heal from helping others. At least I do.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Oh, that is what a gift you're sharing with others, and I have to read your book. Anyway, we have about 10 minutes, and so let's go quickly through the panel, and then I'd like you to have the last word. Okay.
All righty.
This is amazing, and bless you for what you do. That wow. Okay, let's go to Bill. You're on with Thomasine.
I just love the story of how the book got written. That is really great. And, you know, it just shows you, this is a kind of a book inside of all of us, frankly.
mm-hmm.
But how does it come out? It could come out in a lot of different ways. I mean, it was by accident, an accidental writing, and then 5 years till the publishing, and then a period of time till she got comfortable with it or the community around her, and now it's being used in all different kinds of ways.
Mm-hmm.
I love the story of the book and its various transitions. I also love where she ended up saying just now that
mm-hmm.
it is our stories that we have to offer others that save lives around here. And it's one of the premises, of course, Thomasine, of NASCA. We provide not only this radio show, which we've done 3,000 of these, but, all kinds of other venues where people can share, perhaps not their whole story, but story in pieces, bits and pieces of individual vignettes that occurred to them that help other people identify and so forth. And it actually
mm-hmm.
is saving lives. It's no small thing. And I think everybody listening tonight and everybody who's a member of NASCA and the family has some of that in them. We have the ability to change and save lives. I think one final thought, Joe, is that what she described as, I'm not a drinker, but I felt this thing, euphoria and so forth, that's called a spiritual awakening. It doesn't rely on alcohol or hypnosis. It relies on us being fundamentally emotionally, or I'll say spiritually, in a new place, and the feeling is completely unfamiliar when it occurs. You don't know what it is. But that's what it is. I think Thomasine would probably recognize it as well that way, too, today. Anyway,
thank you
so much, Thomasine, for the stories.
Thank you for saying that, but I couldn't say that it is a spiritual
awakening.
You're
doing great.
Yes, thank you so much.
Great, thank you, Bill. Okay, we're going to Pamela. Pamela, you're on with Thomasine.
Okay, hey, Ms. Thomasine.
Hey, Pam.
Let's say, when did you stop doing this thing with going to the, or have you stopped going to help rape victims? Have you stopped that now?
Where I live now, I don't have that that particular hospital in my area. That hospital is in PG County. I live in Frederick County, which is a good hour away. I am trying to, I'm working with hospice now.
Okay. Awesome.
Which I've taken my training, my clinical pastoral educational training to be a hospital chaplain. So I go between either hospital or hospice to hold individuals' hands who are transitioning and try and help them and help the family members with the grief counseling. So that's what I do now.
That's awesome.
Very nice. Thank you.
You've got your book and your books. You're just now trying to get your book known again because I don't know if it ever, you said you got a lot of it, a lot of copies out, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I had a lot out, but I don't think it did as well as it possibly could do now because of the Me Too movement. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we're hoping your book does well because it's an excellent book.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Pamela.
And thank you for inviting me to this group.
Okay.
Thank you. And we've got about 6 minutes. So, Al in Washington, D.C., you're on with Thomasina. Thomasine. I'm going to say that yet.
Yes. I'll just say this real quick. I remember the night that Thomasine had a book reading. And Dr. Welsing came, and that was the first time I got a chance to meet her. I was just sitting there thinking about all the things that you're talking about, and I remember how she looked at Thomasine that night, and there were so many people there trying to figure out why she was there. She was like an enigma, you know, like so well-known and so well-respected. Who did she come to see? And she came over to Thomasine, and she came over to where I was sitting, and she sat in front of me. And I remember she just attentively looked at Thomasine and listened to every word when she was reading from her book, and like a proud parent. And and so I see that now. I see that when she speaks to people. I've been blessed to be able to be around her when she speaks to others, and the way she kind of walks in and stirs energy around and helps to break people free of things that they're going through or that they're trying to release from. And she's helped me also. And, you know, and there's a lot of things that I'll just always be grateful for because she, through her education and stuff, was able to emerge me. And something I hadn't thought about either, because I've been through a lot of things myself, but I too am a survivor. And this is the first time I'm saying it, and it's public.
Wow.
But I'm a survivor also. And so I thank you for learning that tonight. So thank you. So, yep.
Thank you.
So in my book. Yeah.
All right.
Thank you, Al.
All right, Amanda, you're on with Thomasine.
Ms. Thomasine, I just wanted to thank you for sharing your story, and you are a beautiful lady.
Thank you, Amanda.
And
know that
Amanda.
I'm always here for you.
Yes, ma'am.
And thank you for calling in. Appreciate it, Amanda. All right. And then we have Patricia. You're on with Thomasine.
Thomasine, I just want to say that your story has been very inspirational to me, and I'm sure many others. And I thank God that Dr. Welsing saw the author in you and saw a story that needed to be told to help others. So I'm just very thankful to at the way that God is using you and using your voice to bring healing to so many others.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. All right. You have about 2 minutes to close off with whatever you want to leave us with, Thomasine.
Well, first of all, I want to thank the Creator and all those that have walked with me and those on the other side who are no longer with us for this experience, this journey that I've been on. And I also want to tell the audience that no matter what you're going through, you can heal. The healing starts within. You can be healed from the inside out. And there's always a light at the end of the tunnel. You have to do the work. It's a little painful, but in the end, you will have peace of mind and calmness.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you. And just a quick, where do you go from here? Do you have other places you're speaking, or?
No, I'm trying to write another book.
All right.
It's the healing. It's how I healed.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Okay. Well, something to look forward to. And
yes.
And thank you so much for being here and for sharing your story. I think your book is going to be very, very helpful to a lot of people. It already is. It's and just think of all of the social workers you're helping with your book, because they are going to get a little insight into what the children who've been abused go through, so that even though they haven't themselves, they may have a little more understanding, and that is a great gift that you're giving people. So thank you. You're welcome to use the same number and call back in and be on a panel anytime. We're Monday through Friday at the same time, 5 o'clock West Coast time, 8 o'clock East Coast time, for an hour and a half. You're welcome to come in and share your questions and comments with the guest that evening on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And then also Tuesdays and Thursdays is an open mic where people can ask questions of a survivor professional. So I hope we hear more from you. I'm looking forward to it anyway. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and yes, you will, definitely.
Great. All right, and so this is Joe Koch signing off for NASCA, saying blessings to all the children and blessings to all the survivors of child abuse. Good night.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn was
Blog Talk Radio.